Accession number 24830.
Mr. Hipperson, Real 4. We're talking about your time with a draft attached to a support company, of the 1st Battalion Middlesex Regiment at Sandwich Camp. You were with them from September 51 to January 52. And one thing you remembered was the Christmas celebrations you had. What do you remember of them? How did you celebrate Christmas that year?
Well, that sort of a quiet celebration, but a usual sort of army celebration, really. I think the officers served the food in the dining hall and that sort of thing. And we obviously went in the naffy and had a few beers. And, you know, sort of Christmas went by. Nothing really, I suppose we all got a little bit merry and enjoyed yourself.
Did you know how long you were going to be with them?
Well, we knew all the time that we were not going to be there for long. We remained in the Royal Norfolks attached to the Middlesex Regiment, and we knew that we would be moving on to join the battalion in Korea. But whilst we were in Hong Kong, the 1st Battalion of Norfolk Regiment came through Hong Kong on its way out to Korea, and we knew all the time that we would eventually be joining, not necessarily the Norfolks in Hong Kong, but we'd be going to Korea, not necessarily the Norfolks in Korea, but we would be going to Korea to join an infantry battalion as reinforcements.
And what actually happened, bro?
So we were eventually, we got our orders that we were on the move, which was somewhere, as far as I can remember, end of January time, I believe. And we were drafted to Korea. I remember going down to the docks, and the first thing I saw was the MV Devonshire troop ship standing there, and I thought, I don't believe this. We can't get this heap of junk again. But we did. Terrible thing it was. Believe it or not, I was on the way out. I was sticking my mind. I was on mess table 18, deck 4 lower. And as we walked up the gangplank, the same bombing guy handed me a card, and that said, "Mess deck 19, 4 lower." Almost unbelievable. But anyway, we set sail from Hong Kong to Japan. I remember the sea was pretty rough. We were sort of kept below decks most of the time. It was only a couple of days, two or three days, I think 3 days on that thing. Well, ship's done it in two, but I believe it was three in that thing. To Kuri in Japan. We sailed into Kuri in Japan. I remember it was quite memorable, really, because what I remember was we were about sort of hours and hours, it seemed like it was sailing through by all these little tiny islands, which were off the coast of Japan. And eventually finishing up in Kuri in Japan, where we went to that was sort of a Commonwealth division place there.
A rescue camp, a transit camp?
Yep, more or less, yeah, it was a transit camp. But the most notable thing about Japan was we then went to an intensive training course for 21 days, I believe it was, at a camp called JRBD, I think, or something like that. I can't remember. No, it weren't the name of it. I believe that was the name of the place in Kuri. That was about 25 miles from Kure to this camp, which I believe was originally a Japanese camp. That was Winterton. And I remember that thinking the winters in Japan were very similar to they are here.
What kind of training was it? I mean, was it anything you didn't know, or was it revision?
Well, that was really intensive. Foot training, firing, really, really intensive. I mean, that was to toughen you up, really. I remember we slept in a hut. And I counted them, there was 100 beds, 50 either side, a massive ex-Japanese army hut. They'd taken the doors off and the windows out, and the wind and everything blew through the hut. We had no fires in there. That was freezing. Temperatures below freezing most of the time we were there. And I remember regularly getting up in the mornings, because we used to go out, we used to get wet a lot. They made certain we got wet. Nowhere to dry your clothes off when you got back. And I remember just hanging my socks on a piece of string above the bed. When I got up in the morning, they were frozen stiff. And we were issued with about 3 blankets, I think. And the art was to fold them in such a way to get the maximum amount of thicknesses below and above, because you're only sleeping on a camp bed type thing. So you suffer cold from coming up and above around you. And the whole place, that really was, the guy who ran was mad as a march hare. And he really was. But we fired, I used to use a lot of ammunition a lot on the schemes. A couple of blokes got hit. We fired things like, we fired a 2-point, with these rocket launchers, which were just coming out, which fired like a rocket, which I saw later on pictures, but they'd built a shield on. When we fired them, it was no shield, and the blast just hit in the face. You used to go shaving for 2 days after you fired one, because your face was all cut with a blast coming back from the rocket. And that was really
static. Did they have a name, or you just call it rocket launchers?
Yeah, they were the anti-tank. They were an anti-tank thing. I was just trying to think, it was about a 2-inch, like a 2-inch drain pipe, really. You held it on your shoulder, and the number 2 put the rocket in and joined the wires up, and then you fired it. But as you fired it, the blast from this little rocket is hit in the face as it left the end of this drain pipe thing. And but all sorts of things. We used to go out on schemes, and it was Australians there and all sorts, and then we'd sort of have these mock battles and things which would go on for days, and you'd come home, and we had a wet salt course there. And if you came home dry, they used to put you over the wet salt course to make certain you got wet, because you was got to finish up crawling through little tunnels full of water. And I always remember thinking to myself, I think we got killed on the way here, and I'm in hell, it was quite a dreadful place it was. We had 3 weeks there, and we finished up marching back to the camp, and I think that was about 40 miles away, because that took us 2 days. We marched back, we stayed overnight, made bivouacs out of your sleeping bags and things like that. Great, your capes. You had a cape, come ground sheet, like a waterproof thing. And I remember we stayed overnight, because we on the way we sort of did a 20 miles one day, and then stay, camp for the night, and 20 miles the next day, and back to Kure. to the that was JRPD, that was the name of that company. And I remember we got into there, got in the barrack room, and before we took the kit off, some sergeant or somebody ran in and said, "You've got to take the clothes off for a medical inspection." And we said, "Well, we ain't had a bath for weeks. We've been marching here, we were covered with mud and all the rest of it." And anyway, so that's all right, don't matter. And we all stood there, and Emma all come along, and they look at us all, and all in going, and all the usual, you know, cough, and all this, that, and the other, and standing there almost naked. And when he finished, he sort of tells off, because we hadn't been bathing regularly enough, you know. Typical, are we? We all needed a bath. Well, we do, we all needed a bath. But that was, I suppose that was good training, really. But this guy who ran it, this colonel, or lieutenant colonel, I believe he was, who ran it, was mad as a man.
He never. Way. I mean, you know.
Well, I've seen him. I mean, that was all right for me. But I've seen him actually strip down a time-serving sergeant who was going forward to his pension, I suppose, for next to nothing. I've seen him reduce him to the ranks. And he was just a law all to himself, for nothing. I remember one morning, we camped up, and I was leader at number one per section, and it was just for these training purposes, I was leader of number one section, and he said, "I want turn three section on that side of the hill facing the enemy. Number one section, you can go on the rear of the hill just below the skyline." Spent the night there. I don't remember, it rained like hell all night. We had to dig in, and as we dug in, the trenches were puddling up with water and everything, and we spent the night there in the rain. And he said, "Now in the morning, at stand two," which is, what, an hour before daylight, isn't it? "Number two and three section was draw over the brow of the hill to the bottom of the hill and do your breakfast. Number one section, stay where you are, just below the skyline, and put out sentries to watch over the hill for any oncoming enemy, you see." And he said, "But stay where you are. Do your breakfast and stay where you are." And we had sort of tin stuff for breakfast, and well, we had to light the fire and whatever. So anyway, came the morning. He came, all of a sudden he appeared as that was getting, we were standing to. Number two and three section sort of filtered through us as it began to get daylight to the bottom of the hill. We stayed where we were. And I was then going to start getting the fire light so we could have a brew up and get a bit of breakfast, and then got to post a couple of blokes to look out over the brow of the hill to watch out. And he came up the hill and he said, "What are you down there?" I say, I told everyone to get to the bottom of the hill at daylight. And he got himself going, and he got into such a state, he was almost foaming at the mouth, screaming and shouting at me. And he used to carry a big stick. I always remember big tin old army biscuits went flying down the hill as he gave it one. And I thought myself, and I think that's about the only time I lost it when I was in the army with a superior. And because I thought he was going to hit me with a stick. Because he looked at me, he was good too. And I said, "The only reason we're here, because Leader Wild told us to stay here." And he looked at me and I thought, "God, whatever you talk to him, you're in the neck." And he said, "You're right. I did. You're right. I did tell you that. Come on, I'll get you to cook your breakfast." But when you came away from that camp, you was tough. You know, I did toughen you up. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know.
Was he realistic, do you think?
Yeah, very, very realistic. I think he was allowed. He always boasted, I know what he was. He was allowed a fairly high percentage of casualties without an inquiry. And that was very realistic. You run along and his staff would fire a lot of ammunition in between you. As you were running along in a section, you know, in file. That was very realistic. And he taught you a lot of training, you know, techniques on hill fighting and one thing and another, and that was very realistic. And
what sort of hill fighting techniques?
Well, I remember one cause, oh my god, about, you know, pepper potting was one where you sort of moved up in different orders, or you fanned out into a straight line, and one had moved and the others had cover them and all that sort of thing. And he was very explicit, he was very good. There's no doubt about it, you came away from there you were a better soldier for it, you know, when you came away from there. You were tough.
Although he was a bit loopy.
No, he was good. I ain't shouting a bloke down, I'm saying I'm what a character, you know. I did actually meet him again, if I can jump forward a bit, when I came out, and it amazed me that he even recognised me. Whilst I was in hospital later on in Japan, in Kure, because one of the blokes in my section, one day he came up and to my section, he said, "Oh, what a driver, can anyone drive?" And this, I believe his name was Honeywood, he said, "Yeah, I can drive." So he said, "Right, you're my driver." And but when I was in hospital there in Japan, I think I was going out one afternoon, because obviously I used to be allowed out in the afternoon some of the time I was there. And he said, I walked out, was going out the door, and Hollywood stood there, you see. I said, "Are you still driving up there?" "Yeah." I said, "Well, what are you doing up here?" He said, "I now brought the old man up to see one of the lads who got injured, you know, in the training." And as I was talking to him, he came along. So he said, "I remember you." He said, "You've come to my training school, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "What are you doing there?" I said, "I was wounded." He said, "Well, what a waste of money." He said, "Did you go to my training school?"
Do you remember his name?
I can't remember his name. I wish I could. He never wore any rank on his shoulders or anywhere. Never wore a cap badge.
Was he a colonel?
Yeah, I think he was a lieutenant colonel. But he never wore any rank, but you knew he was a governor. Believe you me. Because he was everywhere. He was everywhere. You used to go to cookhouse, and all of a sudden he's standing in the middle of the camp shouting at you about something or the other. And he was, oh dear, what a man. But you came away from there, you a tough and job, all right. Yeah, so anyway, we did that.
This was sort of January to February you were doing
it? Yeah, that's right. We then came back to JRBD at Kure, where they kitted us out with the winter clothing.
Tell us about that.
For Kure, that was good. The British winter clothing was good. See, we'd been with the Middlesex, attached to the Middlesex, who spent the first year the Commonwealth were involved in the Korean War in Korea, when it was a very, very severe winter. They were not issued with the, you know, extra clothing, only what they scrounged really. And their boots used to tell us how severe and how bad it was, but when we got there, that was good.
What did they give you?
Oh dear, honestly. I mean, we had our special underwear, string vests, thermal underwear, socks. We then, for on our feet, we had these boots, which were the first time I'd ever seen them, which today you'd call them Dr. Martens, that type of welded sole boot. I'd never ever seen anything like that before, a welded sole boot like that. And then we had under trousers, ordinary trousers, you know, wear over the top of them. On the top we had string vests, ordinary vests, woolen vests to wear over the string vests, shirts, pullovers, thick pullovers, worn pullovers, a small jacket. For your hands, you had a glove with no palm or fingers in, where your strings went through your fingers, but your back hands and your wrists, gloves to go over them, mitts, and over the top of them we had a peak cap, which had foldable air flap things. And over the top of that, of course, we had the parkas, which were really good, which had a thing, a beaver tail, what you could bring up in between your legs and button up at the front, which, and that was good. The winter clothing we were issued with was excellent. And
so you got that before you left Japan?
Yeah, before we I issued that to us in Japan. We then got on the, they then took us down and we got on this little old rusty ship to belong to some civilian guy, I think that had been used for gun running or something. That was a typical little old thing, what you, like something out of an old Bogart film, you know. We got on this thing, I can't remember how many people were on it, probably, I don't know, maybe 100, I don't know.
And that was about that lot were with you.
I'll guess.
And this would be February 52?
Well, I'll guess it was for this. This would be around February 52, as far as I can remember. Yeah. As far as I can remember, I can't remember then, but I think that was February. And we then went to, they then took us from Kure, and because that's in the South Island of Japan, on the other coast to the on the Pacific Ocean side of Japan. And we went round the bottom of Japan and went to the other sea and across to Busan in this thing. I was sticking my mind about getting on this boat. It's this guy, I don't know whether he owned it or who was the captain or who he was, but or whether he did everything. He said everything. We spent one night on it. That's right, we were on it one night, sort of slept in bunks. And they had a sort of a canteen thing on there where you could buy tea or whatever. He said, okay, I remember the first time I'd heard the currency. He said, you can spend any money on there except one. So I say, well, which one is that? He said, there's always a smart ass. So I say, no, I want to know which one. But he was saying, it was one, Korean one. You spend any currency except one. You know, well, which one? Yeah. But anyway, we went there to
Busan,
where they put us on a truck.
What was your first impression of Busan there?
Well, I can't remember anything particularly special about Busan. I looked very much like most ports did in the Far East, you know.
So what happened then? You got to Busan?
Yeah, and they put us on a train to take us north. And we were on a train for something like about 24 hours.
What do you remember the journey?
Yeah, it was a long, long journey. But although that's a long walk to be on a train, just sitting on a train and getting a bit of food, and must have been fed on there. And well, I didn't mind, I weren't particularly looking forward to joining the battalion, so if it had taken a week, I wouldn't have minded, I don't think. And
Where were you going to?
I can't remember where we got off. We were somewhere. We were going right up north towards, you know, to join the battalion, really. We weren't too far. When we got off a train, we went to sort of a little camp, I say.
You don't know the name?
No, I don't. Where we spent another night. And then we were then told that we would be joining the Norfolk Regiment, and they came along the next morning, I believe, and picked us up in trucks to take us to to the unit.
Now, where were the unit at that time?
At that time, they were in the winter positions and the reservoir. I remember.
Peacock.
Yeah.
Peacock.
I remember that was a bit strange. I remember we got there and they were in a rest position at the time. They were in a rest position at the time when we joined them. When we first joined them, we were in a rest position and they sort of took us to the headquarters company and then they said who'd be going with what company. And it was Bob Guest and myself.
So this would be probably March.
Probably March.
You didn't go into the Sammy John Valley then, did you? After you'd been to them. Because they came out of the Sammy John Valley on the 9th of March to go to Peacock Reservoir, rest positions.
Now we were in the rest position when we went there. Yep, they just moved. They just moved when we went there. When we joined them. I just moved to the rest position because I remember when we joined the battalion of boats, we were talking about the reservoir and all that sort of thing. I just moved to this new position.
Now, which part of the 1st Battalion Royal North Regiment were you posted to?
Well, I was posted then to the Assault Pioneers in the Interport Company. I think it was Bob Guest. I think there was about three of us went in the Assault Pioneers. Three or four of us went with the Assault Pioneers. The rest went to different rifle companies and that sort of thing, you know.
Now, did you keep your rank? You know.
No, it's sort of somehow or the other got missed on the way, and I never said anything about it. Bob Cash was also sort of acting Lance Corporal, he was, but he kept on at him and they recognised him, but I never bothered. And I thought, oh, well, I'll leave
so
it at that.
You were now private. And
well, yeah, I suppose,
but
I wasn't too bothered, you know. I thought, well, I wasn't too bothered about it.
Who was your NCOs and your officers that you were aware of?
Well, the officer was Lieutenant Wormald.
John Wormald?
Well, yeah, Whiskers Wormald, we used to call him. He had a big bushy moustache. Quite a nice young chap. You could talk to him and he could talk to you and he was okay.
And this Whiskers nickname was...
Well, because of the moustache. That's probably just something what the boys called him, Whiskers Wormald. But,
especially big?
Yeah, that was he had a dead rat on his tongue, but, you know, he'd grown this bushy, sort of bushy moustache thing.
And what was he like as a young second lieutenant? He was second lieutenant or second?
But,
second,
yeah. He was alright. He was, he sort of kept discipline fairly well without being too severe, you know. You could be friendly with them and talk to them and at times almost, you know, on a sort of even basis, you know. I found them okay. I liked them as an NCO. And,
as an officer.
And, he was okay.
That was your only officer?
That was the only officer.
What about the platoon sergeant? Who was that?
The name of Bell, Sergeant Bell. His brother was...
Bell?
Bell, B-double-L. His brother was Sergeant Major in one of the other companies.
C Company, H. Bell.
Yeah.
His brother.
Yeah, that was his brother. Yeah, he was a platoon sergeant.
What was he like?
Well, not too obvious, really. He sort of very quiet, really. Yeah, he was all right, but...
Not so keen on it.
Well, he was okay and that sort of thing, but he wasn't... particularly memorable, really.
Yeah.